Hello everyone and welcome to the Belgian Football Podcast. My name is Ben Jackson and as always I'll be your host and once again I'm joined by Scott and Joris. Scott and Joris, how are you guys doing this evening?
Hey everyone, match day one in the books, eh?
What a weekend it was and what a week for the podcast as well. I'll take the role of host here and thank everyone that enjoyed our preview episode as much as we did. The response has been massive, so thank you all.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Complete echo that, Joris. We really enjoyed putting it together and it looks like everyone kind of enjoyed it. This week was the year birthday for us as a podcast, which is really exciting as well, just to see the amount of interest in Belgian football we've kind of seen from people. And yeah, we're just really looking forward to the next season and beyond. But focusing on the here and now, what a weekend we had to open it up. No nil-nils, guys. No nil-nils. We had goals in every single game. I'll quickly run through the games and the results. And then if you're new to this podcast, what we normally do is me and Scott kind of pick a game of the week and a player of the week. And then Joris gives us kind of a stat attack through the rest of the games. But yeah, just to run through the results. So first up on Friday to open the weekend, to open the season, we had Standard Liège against Genk that finished 1-1. Following that on Saturday, we had Leuven against Oddeval again that finished 1-1 as well. So we're kind of waiting for someone to just blow it open and get 3 points. Kortrijk managed to do that. They beat newly promoted Sereng 2-0. Oostend then hosted Charleroi, who were really impressive with a 3-0 win there. Mechelen and Antwerp played out a crazy game. We'll talk about that, that's for sure. It finished 3-2 to Mechelen. Club Brugge and Eupen played an equally exciting, dramatic, controversial game, which finished 2-2. Anderlecht and Union Saint-Gilloise played the Brussels derby to open up the season. Union Saint-Gilloise winning 3-1, a nice shock on the cards there. And a nice little victory for them over their city rivals. Sint-Truiden surprised us as well. They beat Gent 2-1. And then we had a Beerschot Cercle of Bruges game, which started on Saturday afternoon and finished about half an hour ago. Sounds like it was like a cricket match, but it wasn't. It was 45 minutes in, or just after the second half had started, and it was absolutely pissing it down with rain. The ball wasn't moving. The referee completely correctly called the game off, suspended it. Then they came back, finished it off. Score was still the same, 1-0 to Cercle Bruges. Not the most entertaining of games, but they dragged it out for as long as possible. Scott, going to go to you first. What was your game of the week?
Well, as always, I took in quite a number of the games this weekend, so I had a bit of a struggle to decide, actually. I was humming and hawing which way I was going to go, but in the end, I went with the Brussels derby. How could you not? What a great game, actually. It didn't disappoint. That's the first thing to take away from it. We know that Union managed to get a 3-1 win, which was deeply, deeply impressive. Before, you know, the season started, you know, when we were recording a pre-season special and talking about Union, we were talking them up quite a lot, and the fact that they'd been tooling up and seemed to be working really hard in the background, both on and off the park, preparing to be around for quite some time, as we put it. And boy, has that kind of paid off. The early indications are they look like they've never been away, to be honest. I remember the day before the game, actually, Felix Mazu was talking about how they were going to have to be brave on the ball and be really positive with their play because of who they were playing. And the quote that stuck out for me was they were going to have to show some cojones, which they definitely did. They showed their cojones to pretty much everybody. Great, great performance, actually. Did not look out of place at all. First game back in the top flight, of course, for 48 years. It's just worth repeating that again. Didn't look like they were away. Brilliant offensive attacking play. You know, Dante Van Zier, Lapoussin, causing Anderlecht all sorts of problems, some of which, of course, was self-inflicted on Anderlecht's part. But they absolutely showed no fear at all. And it was great to see a newly promoted side, albeit one who do have a history and a heritage, coming back like they've never been away. And I think they really enjoyed themselves, which is a good sign as well. I think from Anderlecht's point of view, the story of this game really is cumulative defensive errors and a number of individual mistakes leading to them throwing the game away, really, because for large chunks of the game they actually played quite well, mistakes aside. But it must be really, really frustrating when you're managed by somebody like Vincent Kompany, a world-class defender in his own right in his playing day, and, you know, for your side to let you down in the areas of the pitch that, you know, are your areas. That must be tremendously frustrating to him. I couldn't believe kind of quite how good they were, and it was obvious within the first 5 minutes that, you know, they weren't just there to make up the numbers. Anderlecht had a lot more possession, which you would expect, but it was about what Union did with the ball, actually. Back to the old efficiency argument, more shots on target, created more chances, won more of the duels. So all the key things things, you know, Union had the edge in, and it was really just about pressing them aggressively, which they did, but not in a way that was kind of careless at kind of key moments. So it was actually a very controlled and composed performance, and I really, really enjoyed it, and it was a great game.
Definitely, yeah. And for Anderlecht side, they really did look very shaky at the back. The issues that they already had last season, they seem to still be present. We all know they're still looking for a striker as well. It's difficult to already judge them on one game, and always unwise to do so, but they definitely were not ready for this opener yet. And Union definitely were. Like, from all the teams and in the whole division, I think they really showed that they are really ready for the season, while many of the teams are still in a build-up phase. Anderlecht definitely will need some work. Union seem up to it. That attacking three was really damaging them. Also, it probably hurts for company as well. Like, Sardella was playing on the right back, and then at the break, he got him off, and then he changed him with Murillo, who, well, was one of the protagonists in giving away another goal. It must be frustrating that the solution that you thought would solve the issues did not really show that either. Union is ready, and watch out for them.
I remember we were talking in the season preview, weren't we, guys, about, you know, how impressed we were with Union's preparation, but what we didn't know was whether that preparation would translate in the way that they wanted and intend on the pitch. And I think, you know, they certainly answered that question at the weekend, and if anything, it exceeded expectations, really. I mean, if they can play anything like that most weeks, then they're going to be, you know, absolutely fine this season, no doubt about it.
Kind of, I want to come back to that first goal for Sardella, obviously with the mistake, but the pass from, I think it's Berger, Danish centre-back, just, it's such a tempting pass for the right-back to think, I can intercept this. But he literally, it's such a perfect pass as well. It literally like, skims just over the top of the full-back's head. And it's one of those ones where, like, if you commit to that, you've got to win it. Obviously, he doesn't win it. But then, even then, like, the defending after it is just pretty shocking. Like, I don't know who it is that comes out. Hoot or Hardwood Bellis comes out to meet the fullback, but no one comes in across to mark Dennis Undav, and he's literally, I don't think he'll ever score an easier goal. He was so wide open, unmarked in the penalty box. It was just ridiculous, wasn't it? Like,
not only that, like, I think Van Zijl was behind him, was also free, so even if he would have gone for a cross for the second post, I think it would indeed still be a goal. And indeed, I also want to stress, like, of course I'm not throwing a Sardella under the bus or something. You can't blame a young kid on that. It was indeed a tempting ball, and it was really a good cross. I don't want to take anything away from Union there.
Yeah, I think Harwood Bellis gets caught out of position actually way back at the start of the move as well. In the original crossfield pass, he moves out when in fact he shouldn't have moved out. So, you know, he leaves a space opened up, and then you've got the two other mistakes you guys were talking about as well, where Sardella gets done because he overcommits, and then there's nobody defending the near post as well. So it's that cumulative thing I was talking about, where it's the perfect combination of mistakes that just, you know, cut you open.
Union as well really took advantage of a back four that hasn't really played together. I think they're all, apart from Sardella, that's pretty much Hoot, Hardwood Bellis and Gomez, all completely new players, aren't they? I was very surprised we really didn't start, but take nothing away from Union. I think Undav and Van Zijl, like we've just said, they were fantastic up front. The way that their movement, and just Van Zijl, like, honestly, I've never seen anyone press that much. Like, he was just running his socks off. Lapis in on the wide areas. I know he made your team of the week, Joris. He was really impressive. Tuma in midfield and central midfield, I thought he was really, really good as well. The back three played really well. And I think we've got to give a shout out to Terry Lazare for the third goal. Came on for his Union debut on loan from Charleroi. What a goal that was with his left peg, wasn't it? Just, I think the French commentator I was listening to shouted shoot, and when he shot, just he went mad. He absolutely loved it. Felt bad for those poor Anderlecht fans. Finally get back in the stadium, and you could just tell they were not impressed with that performance, were they?
That was a great goal, that, actually, because I know at the time there was some talk on social media about kind of the poor defending from Anderlecht, but if you watch it back, you know, I've watched a replay of that goal particularly a few times, and Anderlecht get done from the initial throw-in with the ball as well. I'm not sure who it is, but somebody gets taken out of the game with the throw-in, and that's when, again, when the space opens up, so he's got the free run. Nobody closes him down, and then he hits it, and it's a fantastic finish. Lovely goal.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think, like we've spoken, that they've got issues in the striker position. Raman isn't the striker they're looking for. And I'm saying this as a big Benito Raman fan, obviously from his time at Dusseldorf. I've watched a lot of him play. And the way he scored goals for us at Dusseldorf was lots of times on the counter-attack, which is how obviously they scored their goals. So that was kind of like, that's the way he scored lots of his goals. He'd like break through in behind, but teams that sit deep, he's not as effective. And he showed that at Schalke, he's shown that kind of in this game. So I'm interested to see where they go with him in terms of what the idea is behind bringing him in, like what teams and style are they trying to play with that. Their goal was nice. I think we all agreed that Union could have been about 3-1 up at that time. Obviously, Amuzi hit the post. And then they just got countered the kind of last minute of the first half. And you kind of thought then, you were like, okay, Anderlecht will go into the break and they'll make some changes, which they did. But now, Union, fantastic performance. We could kind of segue here a bit to the other promoted team. I think we should do that now because I've got a kind of comparison here. So do you want to just take us through kind of your thoughts on Sereng? And then I've got a little bit to say on that as well.
Sereng were also looking good, not as bad as everyone seems to have expected. They were looking okay, but the one thing that already has shown and could become an issue if they don't get any reinforcements there is who is going to score the goals, because they had the chances. Unfortunately, our friend Juan Del Maggi was quite present in the game, so we didn't have a bad game at all, but just his finishing was off. So well, let's hope for him and for Sarre that was just a one game thing and just a bit of an adaptation thing. They do seem less ready as Union. They need some adjustment time, I guess, to the league. And all in all, they were not so bad, but still they need to bring some players in or adjust the level from the players that they already have.
Yeah, I think you're dead right, Joris. I saw all of this game actually and really enjoyed it. This was a really good open attacking game of football where both of them were having a right good go at each other. I enjoyed it a lot. I saw enough from Sarang actually to suggest that I think they could be okay. I think it's that one of my favourite words again, it's the efficiency thing, particularly in the final third. You know, Antoine Bernier and Abli Yalo are going to have to just, you know, pick their key pass a little bit better. Marius Mundal Maggi obviously will get used to the league. And it was interesting after the game hearing defender Benjamin Boulanger talking about how they've now got a feel for the level of 1A. You know, as Joris was getting at, they've got a sense of, you know, the physical demands and the pace and the variations of the game and how different it is to 1B in terms of, you know, how much time you get in the ball and things like that. So I saw enough to suggest they'll be okay, but I do agree with Joris. I think they probably need to add one or two more, and I'd be surprised if another couple didn't come in before the end of August.
I think you guys are kind of summing up why I have them bottom in my prediction, and it's nothing to do with like the level of most of their players. I think their players are good. I think what you guys said, I expected them to play good football. I expected them to be impressive. My thing is this goal scoring thing. I just don't see where they're going to get a goal scorer from that's up to this standard and level, because I just don't really understand their recruitment strategy outside of just getting loads of players in from Metz, which obviously worked last year. They got Mikatadze. If they could get him back, I think I'd change my mind. But it doesn't look like that's going to happen. And that's my biggest fear for them, is they're going to be one of those teams who play really nice football, are in the games, but when it really matters, they're just not going to find the finish. They're not going to get the goal. And that, like, they can play good football and be good up to a point, but then it starts to get frustrating, and then it starts to get, your head starts to drop, and then the football starts to disappear as well, and you stop playing that good football, like, because you're just so concerned that you need to make chances, you need to score the goal, there's so much pressure on every single possession and stuff like that, and you're pushing too much, which is kind of my fear for them, like, long term. That's just kind of how I feel at the moment. And when I compare them to Union, I look at Union and I think, yeah, Vanzi and Undav, I don't want to say it, like, we're just not just taking this from one game. Like, we thought this before, we saw them last year in 1B. Like, they look up to this level. The way Union play, they're just as, like, Sarang aren't like much worse than Union in terms of style of football and stuff like that. It's just at the top end, they just don't quite have that player that puts the ball in the back of the net. Like, in my mind, they're a better team than Mouscron were last year. They played much better football than Mouscron, but I kind of worry in the same way about the goal scorer. And I really hope for them, and I hope for Condom, that they can get a goal scorer in, or just someone in that's going to put some of these chances away. It doesn't have to be a 20 goal a season striker, like, even just 10, just to build that confidence in the squad, build the, like, because like they said, they'll get used to the level, but then it's like that cutting edge. Because we even saw that with Vaz and Beveren last year, that like, they had the goal scorer and even they struggled. So I'm glad they're going to play good football and be entertaining, but I'm still concerned.
I think the thing about falling behind in games would be a worry for me with them as well, because they do play quite attractive open football generally. And if, you know, you're in that situation, as Ben was saying, where you have a worry about, you know, where the goals are actually going to come from, and you're falling behind in games sometimes, and the next month while the transfer window remains open, is going to probably tell us more than anything else about how their season's going to pan out, is can they be any more open than they already are, actually? And the thing is, if they're going behind in games, they're going to have to be more open than they already play their football instinctively and naturally, and that would be a worry as well, because it puts even more pressure on the defence, and those gaps between, you know, their defence and midfield widen as, you know, they push to get back into games. So I think the next 2 or 3 weeks are going to be really important for how their season's going to pan out.
Yeah, I just wouldn't compare them to the Mouscoun of last year, because they were looking worse. they were not fun to watch. So far, seem okay. Yeah, I agree. It's still looking worrying for them for these reasons. If I would compare them to next, in a positive scenario to last season, it still could be like Mechelen was suffering until, well, December or so with scoring goals as well. And ultimately, they did make the playoff too. That's a very optimistic view, and I don't really believe in that, but maybe they can do something at a lower scale there. Yeah, it's a positive scenario that I just want to drop in as well.
Yeah, you're dead right, Joris, actually. I think that's why I took a lot of heart from the performance, and why, as I was saying, I think I saw enough to suggest they could be okay as early as the first week, just because of how positive they played. I thought if they keep playing like that, then, you know, hopefully something's going to turn for them at some point in a way that they would want, and maybe they can go on a run and under their own right. Of course, this also works the other way, as Ben was saying, where, you know, a few defeats mount up and then it starts to sap the energy and the morale, and then, you know, you just don't play the football that you know you can play. So we'll see what happens over the next month.
Yeah, it can also still be a circle scenario. Last season, they played quite good football. They got some points in the beginning, and then they fell off. And okay, in the end, they were safe. But it's too early to tell. We're throwing all cliches in there, I guess, now. But yeah, we can't say we're not nuanced.
Yeah, I was thinking for this episode, we should have like a overreaction takes section where we just overreact completely from the first week of matches and pronounce teams that are down and teams that are up, but we won't do that. This actually leads me to a nice little segue onto my game of the week, because I kind of see them as very similar in terms of entertainment to Erpen without Prevljak. When Erpen didn't have Prevljak at the beginning of last season, they were entertaining, they were creating chances, but they weren't quite scoring the goals. It's kind of like a similar, I don't think they need like a Prevljak level striker, because he's a quality player, and I don't think they have the resources to bring someone like that in, but it's kind of like a similar vibe, which means I'm going to start talking about Erpen. And if you watch the Club Bruges Erpen game, you'll know exactly why I've picked this one as my game of the week. What a crazy game. I kind of went into this one expecting that, oh, it's just going to be like a walkover. Bruges will probably win like 3 or 4-0, be like a nice little stroll in the park, and I think they kind of thought that was going to happen. Fair play to Clermont and Erpen. They came out and really took it to Club Bruges. Like, their lineup was positive. Conan and Dele in the first half was running at Clinton Matter, one of the best fullbacks in the Belgian Pro League, and causing him problems. He was causing them so many problems at the back. They were creating chances. Blues, to be fair, were also creating some good chances as well. It's kind of like an end-to-end game, but they just couldn't find a way past Mr. Nuruddin in goal, which was a surprise inclusion. I think most of us kind of predicted that it would be Himmelman who would be the mainstay in goal, but Mr. Nuruddin has kind of thrown his hat in the ring and taken that number one spot from Himmelman, and I think he's going to be in there for some time to come, because what a performance this was from him. I was saying to the guys before, like, just seeing him come out with the Peter Cech kind of like scrum hat on, I was like, okay, this guy's going to be a character. Just the way his energy, the way he was shouting at his players when they were forming a wall and stuff like that, I was like, yeah, this guy, he's a typical keeper. Like, they say all goalkeepers are crazy, and this guy kind of sums it up. But he was fantastic. He made some great saves, really frustrated Club Bruges in more ways than one, which we'll get to. Yeah, he was just fantastic in between the posts for them. Unfortunately for Erpen, despite playing really, really well, they did go behind. Baz Dost scored from the spot after, I think it was Emmanuel Agbadou handballed it. I think it was pretty clearly a handball. His hand was away from his body when he blocked it, which was a shame for him, because up until then, he had been so solid at the back. He had done a fantastic tackle. I think it was Noah Lang or Rika had put a ball in that Dost was just going to tap in. And I don't know how Agbadou got there, but he just somehow stuck his foot in between Baz Dost and the goal and cleared it. I think Baz Dost was just as surprised. And yeah, we mentioned him in our preview about as one of the key players for Erpen to watch. And he definitely kind of showed that in this game. In midfield, Edo Kayembe was quality as well. Steph Peters was great. It was Kayembe actually who scored the equaliser. Not a name you'd have had a lot of money on to score a goal. It's not really his game as a more defensive player, but a bit of terrible defending with some nice play from Erpen actually to kind of set up the goal. It did lead to a little bit of a scrap in the box, and he just put it away. At that point, you're thinking, this is great for Erpen. They're playing well. They've got 1-1 away at Club Brugge. to take the point, guys. Like, just sit in, take the point. But they didn't. They wanted to win. And another bit of awful defending from Club Bruges, like a throw-in that landed at the feet of Boris Lambert, who came on in the second half. I think he replaced Harris or maybe even Ndjali. I think he came on for one of those two. He slotted a ball just round the corner of the Bruges defence into Julien Ngoy running through, slotted it home, and they were 2-1 up, and in my mind, completely deserved. Club Bruges were really slow and laboured. They didn't really look to have that energy and like vibe and buzz that we've known them to have previously. It felt more like they were playing like they did at the end of playoff one, which would be a massive concern to Philippe Clement, because that wasn't good. That wasn't title-winning football that they were playing at that time. And yeah, and then we had 13 minutes of, I guess, what you'd expect a team like Erpen to do if they're away at the champions, which is run the clock down, I guess you could say, in a nice way. Mr. Nuruddin got cramp a couple of times. One of them, it was like a fantastic like save where he tipped it over the bar. Immediately, he cramped up. I'm saying that with kind of quotations. I don't want to say if he did or didn't. But yeah, then it was just yellow cards galore for Erpen. They were just running the clock down, definitely wasting time, which I'm completely kind of okay with. I think if you're a team in that position and you're that stature and you think about kind of what they've done, how well they played, you've kind of earned the right to do that, because you've actually taken the game to Club Bruges to be ahead. Like, they played well, they played football for 79 minutes. Then they were like, now we can shut up shop because we're winning the game. But then we had 10 minutes of added time added on, which, again, we've discussed this and I think we're kind of in agreement. We're fine with it being the 10 minutes because I think there were genuinely 10 minutes of time wasting and stoppages. It's more about the consistency. I want to see that league-wide. Like, if you're giving 10 minutes there, you need to give 10 minutes if it happens in another game, because we don't always see it. It's very rare, even if there are 10 minutes of stoppages, like teams get away with it a lot more. But Bruges didn't score in those 10 minutes. They scored in the 13th minute of added time. Charles de Ketelaere finishing off a Noah Lang cross to break Erpen hearts, despite they'd been fantastic. Like, before the game, they'd have probably taken a point, but in the end, it was finished 2-2. Lots of controversy from fans across the league about the adding of the extra 3 minutes on top. Joris, I know you've got a little bit more controversy that you want to talk about. I know there's an incident where Julien Ngoy was in and they pulled up for handball rather than letting the game play on. And if they had let it play on and seen what had happened, VAR would have found that there wasn't a handball. There also was a potential handball for Noah Lang for the goal. So yeah, loads of controversy, loads of crazy things happened. Joris, what are your kind of take on it?
About these handballs, definitely the one with Ngoy, they should always have played on. Then that it could have been, I think it was already on 1-2, so it could have been the decisive 1-3. And I'm quite convinced that then we would not have gotten 10 more added minutes, 13 minutes in the end, for example. That was quite a ridiculous decision. I do think they did check the Lang handball in the end, whether it was one or not. And just like, yeah, this needs to be done more consistently. And I'm also a bit weirded out, I guess, with all the media saying like, oh, Erpen were so negative and they deserved it. They actually could have gotten even more time. Yeah, I don't feel like that's really the case. We already see that it's not going to happen consistently. And I'm a bit surprised with the media then really basically defending Club Brugge, the big guy, against the small Erpen. Maybe that's exactly why, but it bothers me a bit. I indeed can get like these 10 minutes. I agree. Yes, but probably that happened. And also like some fact checking that has been done about how much the ball was in play during the game. It was not that much higher or lower deviating from what a regular football game. Yeah, how much the ball is in play during a regular football game. It was a matter of a few minutes. That's why 10 minutes, it's possible, but to then still add more minutes. I'm always have been and will stay a fan of introducing a stop clock, checking when the ball is really inside the game.
I think it's really difficult, isn't it? Because this is one of the games, I didn't see this game actually, guys, as you know, and I did pick up on the kind of the stoppage time controversy, and my initial reaction was, okay, that's really unusual, that amount of stoppage time in the first place. But then very quickly I started to think, okay, so what's the stoppage time actually for here? Obviously that's at the referee's discretion, but what has he seen? What's he actually adding the time for as well? And especially when it gets to sort of 3 minutes beyond what was the allocated. I mean, obviously he's added even more time on, that's what's happened. But yeah, to me, things like that are just about the lack of transparency. And it's just another example of, like, the VAR controversies, of which there's almost one in every game now. It's, you just wish that somebody would be able to come out free from, yeah, being able to be kind of roasted too much and just explain a little bit more about what that was all about, because they come out sometimes and explain some other decisions, and that's definitely one that needed a little bit of dialogue, I thought.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think, like you said, Joris, I don't think it's fair to criticise Erpen too much. Like, they played, like, they came to play football. Like, Andreas Beck was getting up and down the wings at, like, 30-odd years old, like, they came to play. I was really impressed with what Clermont did. I thought he was really brave, like, in his first game to play the way they did. I don't think Blues were that good. Club Blues were really not that good. Not what we'd expect. We'd expect a lot more. I think they thought they were going to walk all over Erpen, and it just didn't happen. And if you think about it, to need, what was it, 103 minutes to score an equalising goal against the likes of Erpen, like, that's not great. Yeah, I guess to your point, Scott, about the ref adding time in, there was more time wasting in the extra time. Like, that was, it's not like they got to, like, 90 minutes and decided, you know what, we'll stop wasting time for these last 10. Like, they did keep wasting time, which they're well within their rights to do. Like, I'm sorry, but any team and any level of football would do that. It's almost unprofessional not to do that, in my mind. Like, if you're serious about winning a game of football, you do what you have to do.
Yes, and, like, that's where the main also one of the main frustrations is, because literally every team does that and never there's added time, or maybe half a minute, like, or maybe a minute max, but, like, never they're gonna play on for that long. I know, indeed, there was a lot of extra time already, and yeah, of course, indeed, Erpen, by the end it became a bit too much. I also agree with that. Nuruddin was with his second cramp. That was I guess he was overperforming in many ways there.
he put on a show, that's for sure. And I think what I found funny about his cramp was he couldn't take the ground kicks, but out of his hands he was fine. He could just boot it out of his hands and he was absolutely fine. He was actually, just to kind of segue quickly, I've got another 2 points in this game. Sorry, it's been a long kind of dialogue on this, but there was so much going on. He was my player of the week because I do love a good goalkeeper. And he made, what, 9 saves, a couple of punches. He threw out quite well as well. His passing wasn't so great, but I don't think that's much of an issue when he's keeping the ball out like that. Some really, really quality saves. He also acted as a sweeper, according to FootMob, once. And I can remember exactly when that was. And it was like a ball over the top to one of the Club Bruges players, and he just sprinted out of nowhere and just booted it into the stands. So I thought it was good. It's good to see, like, the confidence in him and stuff like that. He put on a show. My last kind of point on this is I have a theory that I don't think that much time gets added if fans aren't back in the stadium. And I do just want to quickly say it's fantastic to have fans back in the stadium. Like, it made such a difference to watching these games this weekend, just having some atmosphere. And the Bruges fans, as you'd expect them to do, the Club Bruges fans, got on the referee's back. They were getting annoyed. They were getting frustrated with the time wasting, as you'd expect. They're well within their rights to do that. They're obviously chanting, they're booing, they're putting pressure on the referee. Referees haven't had this sort of pressure for a while. I think that's what happened. And I think at the end of the day, the person to blame is the officials, if that's the issue. It's kind of like the officials have to be consistent in dishing out this time and how they officiate people wasting time. But let's kind of move away from that game. We've spoken about it quite a bit. Scott, who is your player of the week?
Well, I've gone for a slightly left field one for my first one of the season. And are you ready for this one, folks? I went for Manuel Benson, Antwerp's 24-year-old winger. Now, we're talking about a player here who is pretty much out of the picture, actually, at Antwerp, and probably wouldn't have played, let alone have been in the squad, had Michel-Ange Balakhshvisha been fit, which of course he isn't. He's got a little injury at the moment. Or even Koji Mayoshi, who's away at the Olympics. If either of those two had been around, then he probably wouldn't even have made the squad. But I just felt he had a kind of quietly effective and sort of confident game, very decent offensive performance, as I was saying, for a player who is completely out of the picture there. He actually spent the second half of last season on loan in the Eredivisie at Zwolle. Unbelievable, really. And here's a little Joris moment for you. I'm going to take a leaf out of our Joris's book. Do you guys know when Manuel Benson last featured on the pitch for Antwerp?
Ooh.
Was he on there for longer than Andy King?
Well, he actually, last time he got some game time for Antwerp was last December in a 1-0 defeat at the Bossel when Zulte Waregem were visiting. So his movement was great. He got into good positions. He had 3 shots on target, scored quite a good goal, created a good opportunity, which they wasted as well. It was just a really, really positive and largely unremarkable performance from a player who just, you know, is completely out of it, really. So it'll be quite interesting to see what happens. I mean, he might keep his place this coming weekend because of Balakhshvisha's injury. But I went with Manuel Benson this week.
Yeah, And I just have to say, like, I think he has been a bit too quiet for being such a standout.
I think it's my inner scout was coming out a little bit, guys. I think I saw some touches and some play from him that I thought, I'd like to see a little bit more of you. It's unlikely that, you know, we're going to get to see too much more of him, of course. But I just thought that was an interesting one.
But just like, he really just also had like 33 touches, which is very little. But still, these were of quality then. So of course, you still see some glimpses. So that if he can grow and it makes sense, that's indeed after such a long time.
Yeah, I think it's like, you know, I'll use it again. I might as well use it a third time. It's the efficiency thing, I think, again. You're right, you know, he did very little in the game, but what he did have, you know, a bigger influence on the game than his play kind of suggests. And it's one of the reasons why I went for him, actually.
It was kind of good to see him getting back on the pitch. I do want to apologise to Antwerp fans on this game, because when I was watching, it was 2-1, so I was clearly like your lucky charm. And then I went to get some food and I came back and it was 3-2. And I was like, what on earth has happened? But it looks like the man that I said was going to have a good season, Ferdy de Roof, has started off very, very well with those two goals. I haven't watched them back yet, so I don't know if it was calamity or great striking ability. But yeah, it was nice to see Michael Frey get off the mark, albeit that was a slightly dodgy deflected goal, and then de Roof as well. So the strikers have started reasonably well for some teams. Joris, let's have a look at some of the other teams and how they got on.
My prediction pool results, to also plug that a little already, were poorer than poor. None of the big six managed to win their game, and I'm very low in our prediction pool so far. So please jump in. Ben will get you the information later on. For Gent and from the big six, and going back to them, it's becoming a trend that they'd rather not see, I guess. It's already the ninth season, yes, ninth in a row, that they do not win the opening game in the league. But what a decider from Bruls that was, though. We did say that St. Truiden might need and get some goals from distance this season to get their tally up. He underlined that straight away. He made a statement there.
Goal of the season contender already. The technique is just, amazing.
Yeah, he has like a few of these in each season, I suppose, because last season he also had a brilliant one, as we discussed among ourselves before.
He did, yeah. If you've missed a goal at all anywhere, go and check it out in our Twitter feed, because we did share it after the game.
Then, we also coming back, look, I'm not going to do this every week, but now since it's all still fresh, I'm going to come back a bit to what we said in the previous episodes on the preview about potential striker partnerships. In this case, we had mentioned Gano and Vossen might be one. Unfortunately, they did not play together. And of course, we all are fans of Muleka and Klaus, who were okay, not outstanding or really excelling, but they were okay. But two other ones, striker partnerships, actually have performed really well this weekend and have given their teams a victory effectively. We've already spoken about Van Zijre and Undaf. Scott also already mentioned Lapoussin was also great. I guess he could be considered as a supporting striker or a wing striker as well there. It's a bit, if we go too very much into the tactics, I didn't really go into that for this purpose. And also, like as we just mentioned, Druff had a good game together with his partner Kuipers, who didn't score, but had a really good debut game, I suppose, as well, and partnered up really well with him. And Druff's goals, to give Ben some insight. The first goal, either it's a really good skill or he completely mishit it. So like it looks a bit like, in one angle, it looks like he wants to hit it like in the left top corner and it goes in at the right bottom one, and that he just completely mishits it. On the other side, on another angle, you feel like, maybe it's just a technical skill that he kind of wanted to do exactly this, so put it away in the corner that nobody expected. I'm not going to judge, but it looked a bit weird. And the second one was a really good strike from distance as well, after trying to play out from the back from Sick. That was quite bad. That went wrong. Talking about Drav, he's also getting a habit of scoring goals against Antwerp. A few seasons ago, he already scored an important goal against them in the Europa League qualifiers when he was still at his former club, AZ Alkmaar. Well, his parent club still, I believe, even. Now he's two goals there definitely helps to turn the game around. That would only be 3 goals that he scored against them, but you have to also consider that he only scored 3 in total last year in the half season he spent in Mechelen. So he's not the goal scorer, but he has scored quite some against Antwerp, quite a considerable considerable amount of these against Antwerp. Keep on talking about strikers. Onuachu, on the other hand, seems still to not like to play against Thandar, because I've touched on this a few times last season. Still no goals against them for him, while he did have the chances. So he still needs to get the season started. He didn't have that much of a preseason. There was also, of course, a game between Beerschot and Cercle. The rain and the floods were probably the thing that was standing out there, because for the rest, there was not much going on in that game. But a lovely goal for first goal in the Pro League for Olivier de Man. So just want to give him a shout. It was nice to see that the solidarity between all clubs in supporting the people of Belgium that were affected by the floods that had been going on around 10 days ago, as we are recording now. Nice to see the solidarity in the league there. Last but not least, Tabletoppers now, and we didn't mention them yet, so I guess they also do deserve this mention, are Charleroi. Thanks to both an outstanding Morioka, who really had an amazing game. Like, I'm not really the biggest fan of him, but here, yeah, he really stood out both defensively, and he gave 2 assists. So yeah, really, really, really great game. And it was also nice to see Anas Sarouri get an assist and a goal already in his first game for Charleroi. He was last season at Lommel. Yeah, I've talked about a few of the Lommel players from last season that could have a good season, breakout season in the league in the preview episode. This one I didn't mention, and he has shown up, definitely. So I'm sorry for missing out on you, Anas. Keep it up. Yeah, let's also hope they go on to do better than last season Tabletoppers after match day one. So that team that was first after on goal difference, of course, after match day one at the time was Wasan Bever. So we all know that story didn't end so well. So let's hope for Charleroi that it ends better, that it's not a battle.
Yeah, no, thanks so much, Joris. That's fantastic. I did kind of want to pick up, you're talking about strike partnerships, and you kind of almost mentioned one there. Zahri and Bedia with a strike partnership for Charleroi, both scored, and an assist for Zahri as well. Like, they don't need anyone else. I was saying to you guys, like, Siobhan Nicholson, who we had as their only registered striker because we didn't think Bedia was coming back into the squad, like, loaned out, seemed to be kind of on the fringes and not really part of their plans. So fair play to him, scored a really nice goal. Him and Zahri looked really good. That whole team looked good. And fair play to Mr. Ed Still, because he put two of their better players, probably arguably their two best players, he left them on the bench. Imabu Dufal and Ali Golazadze didn't start the game. He went with 3 at the back, and then he had Kembe and Van Klimput on the wings with Zahri and Bedia up front, and they looked really good. Like you said, Morioka was fantastic in midfield. I thought Liam Maritra did really well kind of mopping up. Slightly disappointed in Oostend, but I think it's kind of understandable why they struggled, because Blessing's been saying they don't have the players for the system at this very moment in time. Like you guys were talking about teams that are ready for the league and ready for the season. Like, Oostend just aren't ready yet. And they have made some signings. They have made one signing that we think could be the Sakala replacement. Let's quickly move on. Joris did kind of hint to it and did mention there that we do have a prediction league going on. It's via Kicktip on my website. So if you go onto the Kicktip website and you search for Belge FP, so BELGFP, alternatively, you can find it on our Twitter feed. We'll tweet it out with this episode again, just to make it easier rather than you have to scroll through all those things. But we're hopefully going to put some prizes together for people that do well, or the person that finishes top. Depending on how many people we actually get into it, if we get enough, we could do prizes for the top 3. If we get even more than that, maybe even for the top 5. Who knows? So if that's not an incentive enough to get involved in that, then what is? Let's move on then, shall we? So yeah, that's our prediction league that we've got going on at the moment. We hope you will get involved in that. And like Joris said, I don't think anyone got the Bruges result right this week. I don't think anyone kind of saw that one coming. So yeah, let's move on. So quick little roundup of league news, as we have talked a fair amount about the games. So we kind of been asked this quite a few times about where you can watch the game, and we had been pointing you to what was used to be Maikuju, which has now officially been taken over by 11 Sports. We believe that the games would be free. That's not the case. You have to pay per game, but if you do want to watch the games for free at this very moment in time, you can use the One Football app. You can watch that on your phone, on your tablet, or like kind of device like that. You can watch it on your TV if you've got a smart TV. That's what I've been doing. Or you can watch it just via their One Football website. Super, super easy. If you're lucky, you may get some English commentary. Will Downing, he sometimes is on some of the games. He was on the Bruges Open game. He was also on the Standard Liège Genk game. And I think he was on the Mechelen Antwerp game as well, guys, wasn't he? He did.
He was, yeah.
Antwerp, Mechelen and Bruges against Open back-to-back. So fair play, Will. That's, yeah. I know that after just an hour and a bit of talking on this podcast, I get quite dry mouth and tired. So I don't know how you did two 90-minute matches. It was very impressive. And just quickly before we do sign out, let's just quickly go over. There's been a couple of signings. Just want to get your guys' takes on those before we do head off. So best kept secret that we've all known about for ages is Aaron Donham from Vålerenga has signed for Standard Liège. It took ages for them to announce it because they took forever to film him walking through the woods just as a Viking.
Slightly over the top.
I love it though. Yeah, you gotta kind of milk it. Yeah, it was definitely over the top. He said today that he's very crazy, but the right kind of crazy. Scott, what do you think about this one? Do you think he is the right kind of crazy for Standard?
Well, we'll find out soon enough, won't we? I think Standard certainly need a bit of zip and a bit of zing in their play. And obviously, you know, that's the main reason he's been brought in. Vålerenga certainly missed him the other night when they were playing Ghent in the Conference League. I'm hopeful that he will. I really liked, actually, the signing announcement video. I think if teams put as much effort into, you know, their work on the pitch as they did some of their signing videos, that, you know, they might have better seasons, but we all like these things. He's a good player, actually. He's an exciting player. And, you know, if he can bring the game that, you know, he'd been bringing for Vålerenga, then I think Standard are going to have a good player in their hands. Obviously, Balak Swish has gone to Antwerp now, so he's essentially a direct replacement for him. And, you know, let's just hope he can kind of hit the ground running.
Yeah, no, definitely. I've watched, I'm not going to say I'm an expert on Vålerenga at all, but I have watched a bit of them last season. He was one player that definitely stood out for them. I know that Lee Scott over at Total Football Analysis has kind of done like an in-depth tactical kind of breakdown on how he'd fit into the system, what he'd bring. So if you're interested in looking beyond what we've just said and what kind of are like kind of on the water and you want to do a deeper dive into what he's going to bring, definitely check that out. Really, really good piece by Lee. He's one of the best people that writes on scouting and tactical football out there.
And Standard needs to have some crazy. That's just a given. And it's not a bad or a good thing. Just like, yeah, that they just need that. It's a bit the same with Antwerp. Like,
yeah,
the maybe the Flemish in the Walloon pole of crazy on that. They just need to have that in their good days and in their bad days.
Absolutely. A bit of personality and character is never a bad thing in any side, perhaps unless your name's Didi Lamkelzee.
Yeah, I think he'll save most of his crazy from the pitch, but I think they're going to love him because he's just one of those players who works really hard, like chases everything, won't give up on a lost cause, but also has the quality as well to kind of not just be out there to run around. So I think they're going to love him there. I think he'll be definitely like a fan's favourite after a couple of games. And just hope he hits the ground running. Another kind of big deal that kind of it seemed to come out of nowhere. Kosunu has left Club Brugge and gone to Leverkusen for a fee that we think is going to rise to about 30 million euros. So a big fee for a player that young and that, I guess, inexperienced. Like, that fee, do you accept that any day of the week, don't you, for a player for that? That's just a given. It's good to see kind of in the Belgian league that a player is going to go for that amount of money, like a young, exciting prospect. They brought in Nsoki of Nice. Joris, do you know much about him? I don't know much about him.
I don't know that much. Like, I know he used to be a PSG player. He also had a few appearances there, I think. But yeah, he's gone quite a sum to Nice before. So 12 million euros, I believe. Yeah, now they sell him. I guess he was a bit of a disappointment at Nice. Yeah, I've seen some of the things on social media from Nice supporters as well. Another thing you never should do for a player that is not performing well, he's always going to be thrown under the bus. But yeah, it really was. It probably also at least shows that he wasn't so good as they hoped for, at least. And I know he's like he actually more of a left back, I guess, but he can play both. I think I just looked at his stats, I didn't see him play, but like he got like 20 games in as left back and 20 games as center back. So you can also use him on left back. They bought Sobol, of course, now officially. At least he's been around already, of course. But, Ricard can also play there, but I guess he might be a bit of a case like with Ricard. I guess that also can play both positions there, if needed, and depending on the formation as well, I suppose. But yeah, I cannot really say much about how he is as a player, how he likes to move forward and so on. But about his positions and the like. yeah, that he wants to rebound his career, I guess.
I do hope he has some pace about him, guys, because one of the things I was thinking was, you know, losing Kosunu, actually, you know, if they don't bring in a player with a similar degree of pace, and Kosunu certainly had plenty of that, as well as, you know, a good degree of physicality about him, which one of the reasons that made him such an exciting prospect for a defender, you know, it'll need to be comparable to that, because I think Bruges could look a little bit leggy at the back if that's not replaced.
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah, no, 100%. I think I like the way they've just gone and got someone in like quickly. It's like that forward planning, isn't it? Like, okay, if this move happens, we're going to bring this guy in. And they've just done that quickly. And yeah, like you said, Joris, if he can play left back and play like left centre back, I love that tactically, like the versatility that gives you to play three at the back with wing backs, or he can just slot into the four that they were playing on the weekend, like gives them depth as well for the Champions League and stuff like that. Like, yeah, I think it's a smart move. He's clearly highly rated, was highly rated before. So it's just now a case of rediscovering that. And it's a good kind of system and structure to go into to rediscover that. The final one quickly before we go, that I just want to quickly jump on, because I mentioned, I guess, earlier about the Sakala replacement for East End. Looks like they've got that. They bring in Thierry Ambrose. So Thierry Ambrose, he is 24-year-old French striker, but can also play left wing. He joins from Metz, which is surprising, given Salang probably were like, hang on a minute. What have you given to us? A former Man City youth player. Not exactly lit it up in terms of goal scoring. His best kind of spell in terms of goals when he was on loan at NAC Breda in Holland. He's only scored one goal for Metz in the last year in 25 games. So he's kind of like Sakala in the sense to me that he can play as a winger or as a striker. Like Sakala played a lot of wing, but then Blessin turned him into a striker. And I believe Blessin would have brought him in with that kind of same mentality. It helps them, doesn't it? I think they just, watching Martage and Kvesina up front, I was like, they just need that little bit more mobility next to them. Like, Martage is quite a mobile guy for his size. And you guys know I'm a massive fan of Martage. But I think just having Sakala next to him made him a better player. And I think the same with Kvasina. Having Sakala next to him like this, that more diminutive, more tricky sort of player, I think should definitely help. Fingers crossed for Oostend that this is the signing that kind of re-gets them going again. Because they were flat and their pressing game was off completely against Charleroi. I don't think it was to the level that we expected from them. Any quick thoughts from you guys on this one?
Well, I kind of expected them because they're very low in my prediction.
You got going down.
but that might be like, these are things are just based on feelings. There's no basis for that. So for Oostende fans as well. So I just had to put a name there. Have some kind of tweaks that do not have a very standardized one.
Joris is giving us the BFP's first hot take of the season.
maybe. But they actually did start quite well in their game. Unfortunately, of course, it doesn't help that they went a goal behind after 8 minutes after the first attack of Charleroi. Virtually, that doesn't help if you don't have a striker. Well, you don't have a very well set up stacking forward play yet in the system, of course. So the players can even still be the same, but there needs indeed to be some addition there. I agree with that.
Thierry Ambrose is actually the third striker that Oostend have brought in recently, because another two have come in and immediately been loaned out as well. So it caught us all a little bit off guard. We'll do a whole episode on that alone. You know, as a team that, you know, striking, you know, the striking department's the one that you probably need to do the most work on. You bring in three strikers and you immediately send two of those three out on loan. Interesting.
They literally brought in a player today. 2 hours ago, they brought in second division's top scorer from
Andrew Young.
Andrew Young. Straight on loan to Nancy. I'm sure someone from East End, we're more than happy to have someone come and explain to me like what's going on and all that sort of stuff. I'm sure they know what they're doing. They know players that aren't ready are ready. And I guess for us, for me personally, it's kind of confusing in the sense that we know that they needed someone in that position. And then to see players coming in and going straight back out on loan is confusing. But obviously they've got targets in mind. And clearly they probably knew Thierry Ambrose was coming in. It was just a case of getting everything sorted on that one. And transfers are taking longer now than they did before.
There was some interesting stuff. I don't know if you guys saw it today. There was some interesting stuff where Oostend fans were talking about the club's relationship with Nancy, as a kind of parent club, part of the Pacific Group, and they were saying they're all for, you know, exchanges and loans between the clubs, but, you know, come on, you know, we need some players of our own. I think they were just a wee bit worried that the balance was weighted too far in somebody else's favour at the moment. So they're holding out for their own piece of silver.
No, I completely would understand that from a club's perspective. Like, at the end of the day, you don't want to be in the position where you're just loaning away your players to other teams and there's no consistency. You want players in your club and you want your team to sign players. Let's quickly look ahead to the games that are coming up. Joris, of the games that are coming up, what one are you looking forward to the most?
I guess I'm going to go for a left field choice in Zulte Waregem against Standard, since both are teams that did not win in the first game. So yeah, it's always interesting to see who will have a missed start. And there's a few more options like that, actually. Maybe I might jump onto my own team then as well. So Genk and Oostende, of course, I'm also looking forward to that. And the same applies to them.
Scott, which one are you looking forward to?
Charleroi's game at home to St Truiden, largely because I didn't see either of those two sides live this weekend, so I'm looking forward to watching them in their entirety.
Yeah, no, I think they were a lot more impressive than we had them down for. Quite. I thought you guys were going to take two of the ones that I had that I was really interested in, so I'm quite happy about that. Yeah, Union Saint-Éloi against Club Brugge. I think that's a really interesting game now. Seeing how flat Club Brugge were and how on it Union Saint-Éloi were, they're going to go in this with loads of confidence, and they're going to take the game to Club Brugge, and I think that could help Club Brugge. Like, they've had that kind of, oh, Erpen have taken the game to us, like, we've got to up our game. Now they're going into this one thinking, yeah, they're going to take the game to us, we'll take the game to them. So I think it could be a really, really entertaining game. Outside of that, as you said, you've got Genk Oostend to kick off on Friday. Yeah, and then after Charleroi against St Truiden, we have Cercle Brugge against Leuven. If you're planning to watch the games, that's on at the same time as Salang against Mechelen, so dual screen it or just pick one. Either of those two games I think would be quite entertaining. Then we have Erpen against Anderlecht Saturday night. That's going to be a good one as well, I think, judging by their first games. Sunday kicks off with Union against Club Brugge, Zulte Waregem against Standard next, and then Gent go up against Beerschot. Hopefully by then Gent would have got through in the Conference League qualifiers. They are currently, is it 4-0? Up against Vålerenga. The goals just seem to keep flowing in that one. And then we finish on Sunday night with Antwerp against Kortrijk. Antwerp will be hoping to get back to winning ways. Kortrijk will be hoping to continue what they did. Scott and Joris, as always, a pleasure having your company this evening.
Thanks, guys. Been great to catch up. What a first week, eh?
Likewise, Ben. And yeah, indeed, let's continue this. Let's see that it goes on for the whole season.
No nil nils. Let's do it. Let's have no nil-nils for the entire year. It'd be amazing. Yeah, as we said, we have got that prediction league going, so we'll share that. We'll share that on our Twitter account as well. There's also fantasy football. We aren't doing a league in that because it's kind of a weird system where you have to pay to create a league, but it is free to play. So if you're interested in that, I personally am playing that at the moment. I did reasonably well the first week. Not that great. I'm not great at fantasy football, but I'll be sharing my team every week. If you're interested in that sort of stuff, you can join in the conversation there. As always, a massive kind of shout out to our partners, Freelance Football Ops. If you're interested in signing up to their subscription-based newsletter, they find you jobs covering pretty much everything within the football industry. So definitely check them out online or on their social media accounts. Just search for Freelance Football Ops and you'll find them there. And yeah, if you enjoy listening to our podcast, we'd love it if you'd leave us a little review on the app of choice. I know some of them you can't actually leave reviews on, but if not, you can always just get in touch with us and let us know what you think. Any sort of kind of questions, queries, critiques, anything you'd like us to cover. We are kind of planning some special episodes, but we're always open to ideas of kind of topics that you're interested in. We did an Antwerp special. If you haven't listened to that, still relevant, still worth listening to. You can find that if you look back through our archives. It's a really, really good chat. We also did an interview with the CEO of Vaslan Beveren, Antoine Godin, who they're obviously now in 1B, but that was a really interesting chat. And again, it's still relevant because they talk about the possibility of going down to 1B and what that would mean. So it's still quite an interesting conversation. You can also get in touch with us via social media. Our Twitter account is at Belgium Podcast. Individually, I'm at BenJack94. Scott's at Scott_coin and Joris is at Joris_bet. Alternatively, you can email us as well, belgiumfootpodcast@gmail.com. We're also on Facebook and Instagram, so you can find us there as well. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you very soon on another episode of the Belgium Football Podcast.